Thank you, Chad, leading us in our song service. We appreciate those gentlemen that led us at the table and served us. Thank you. And thanks so much, Lewis, for your prayer. We just want to keep our kids in mind as they come back from Gatlinburg and pray that they have a safe journey. I know it's a big weekend. It's very enjoyable when when I went with them a number of times, it just happened so fast. You just get there and it's a go, 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 go. So I know they're going to come back tired, so please keep them in your prayers. Good to see all of you here. Hope you had a really good week. As you can tell, we're beginning to get over the flu bug a little bit. We're starting to see some people that have been absent for a couple of weeks and just seems to go through the families. Good to see you. I'll be very pleased when this flu season is over and we can get on back to normalcy. So, anyway, we're glad that you're here. Hope that you have been blessed this week and had a great week. We're going to continue our study today that, this is actually the fourth lesson in the series. And as I told you, I will hit it for a while and then go on to something else, but I've got a couple more lessons I would like to get through before we take a break and cover some other things. You always have requests about things you'd like to study, and I appreciate that. But we're going to continue to study about God and the holiness of God and what exactly that means to us. It's the fourth lesson, and I don't know if you've noticed or not, but we haven't yet defined holiness. I've tried to say from the very beginning that this, in a sense, is a lesson in futility. That when we as the finite are trying to comprehend He who is infinite, it is something we're just not going to succeed at. And you may say, well, then why do it? Well, my hope and my prayer is that as we go through the study, that we will be able to at least catch glimpses, get, just a flash if it is of God and who He is, because if we do, it can change us. It can alter our life. It can save us. It can change our eternity. And so we're trying to comprehend who God is and just get a peek. In the real sense, the word holiness is a foreign word. Usually when you're dealing with foreign, and we have a number of nationalities in the congregation, and it's wonderful to have every one of them. But when you're dealing with another language, it's trouble understanding, and we usually go to a dictionary or something that helps us to understand what this word means, if it's Chinese or Hebrew or whatever. The problem is that we really don't have a dictionary that covers this idea of God and His holiness. It's something completely beyond us. It truly is foreign to us. It really is a foreign word, and holy is foreign to all languages. So it's a struggle that many have had, and it's been very interesting to read and to study and to see what others have supplied and thought and examined and studied and shared concerning the holiness of God. But this is one of the reasons it's difficult to understand. It's foreign. And then you add to it the fact that holy is used in more than one way in the scriptures, and it sort of compounds it, because you think it's this or you think it's this, and it's this entirety, this whole view of holiness that somehow I hope that we can just get a glimpse of. The Bible uses holiness in a way that's very closely related to God and His goodness and His purity. And as I've said, I think that's usually the first place we go. When we think of God being holy, we think of Him being pure. And that's certainly part of it, but it's not in any way the entirety of the concept of God being holy. God is not touched by the evil of this world. It's an amazing thing. Habakkuk was our text today. And if you know anything about the book of Habakkuk, you know that Habakkuk is upset because the Israelites are so far away from God. They have just fallen and failed to really follow the Lord as He intended for them to do. And so Habakkuk's upset And he's basically coming to God and he's saying, what's up with this? We got all these evil, bad people and you're not doing anything about it. And what are you going to do about it? And the Lord comes to him and he says, don't worry, I've got a plan. I raised up the Chaldean nation or the Babylonian Empire, and I'm going to bring them down, and they're going to be my judgment on the nation of Israel. And you know the history and the scriptures, that's precisely what happened. And then Habakkuk says, but Lord, they're worse than we are. I mean, as bad as we are, they're far, far worse. How can you do this? And God, of course, this is my paraphrase. God, in essence, says to him, Habakkuk, I'm going to take care of them too. I'm going to raise up another nation and I'm going to judge them. I mean, God is completely in control. And after Habakkuk voices his objections, he says, I'm going to stand here on the tower and I'm going to wait your answer. And then God comes and he answers, and suddenly Habakkuk's entire attitude changes. I think you'll notice every time God shows up, people's attitudes change. When they get a glimpse of him, it just changes him. And he said, Lord, your will is just super duper fine with me. Your God, do as you please. But as he's talking about this in Habakkuk 1:13, he tells us, your eyes, speaking of God, are too pure to look on evil. You cannot tolerate wrong. And I think we better listen to that. We need to understand the nature of God, and this is true of him. He does not tolerate wrong, but when he's dealing with evil, it in no way impacts him. He's not contaminated by it. James tells us in James 1:13, he says, let no one say, when he's tempted, I'm being tempted by God. For God cannot be tempted by evil, and he himself does not tempt anyone. Evil doesn't impact God. It impacts us. And he has to find a way to deal with us, and he did. That's the grace of God and the wonderful message of the cross. But the fact is that God is not, in this respect, he's unlike anyone or anything. He's not like certainly the gods of their day and age. I mean, the people were evil. They killed, raped, murdered, plundered, lied, because the false gods they worshiped did the same thing. But that is not the God of the Bible. That is not our holy God. Job brings this up and he says it's unthinkable that God would do wrong in Job 34:12, that the Almighty would pervert justice. When we're dealing with God, he is always going to do right. He never makes a mistake. Wouldn't that be nice? I mean, wouldn't it just be great to never be wrong, to never make a mistake? Now, I've known some people who think that way about themselves, but you pretty well learn quickly they're mistaken. We all have our problems, but God, not God. He will not pervert justice. What he does is always going to be the right thing, and that's part of this concept of the nature of God. He is good. He always does right. He is always holy in his reactions. And we equate that to goodness, and we equate that to purity. But the idea of purity and goodness in the concept of holiness are still secondary. It's not the entirety of God. And I hope you see that. It's important that we do as we study this. So what does it mean? When Isaiah had his vision of the Lord in the temple in Isaiah 6, which we've studied for the past few weeks, he saw the seraphim singing to one another, holy, holy, holy. And we studied and saw all that that says. But when they were trying to define God or to describe him or to help us to see who he is, they used holy, holy, holy. They didn't use purity, purity, purity. They didn't use God as good, good, good. They didn't use anything else. They wanted us to understand who this God is that we serve, and he is holy, and I hope we got a glimpse as we do that. So what does it mean? Well, it means to separate. You've probably heard this. The thing is, I've heard it and heard it and heard it, and I'm still not exactly sure what that means, except that he is different than anything or anyone that we will ever encounter or know. There's no one that we can compare God to. There's no one who is like him. We know nothing that is similar to him or comparable to him. because he is separate, entirely, completely different. And we're going to struggle with this morning. I hope it'll help. What's it mean to be separate? It means to cut or to separate. It comes from an ancient word that means that. In our modern language, we would probably say he's a cut apart. Or we would say it's a cut above something. No matter how good whatever it is that we're talking about is, when it comes to God and his nature, he is so absolutely a cut above that, there's no comparison. That's kind of the idea of God being separate. He's a cut above. When I go into Texas Roadhouse, and if you've been there, you know this, they have all the cuts of meat out in front where you can see them, and you can just look at the one on Dual Highway, and you can watch them prepare the food. I enjoy that. I hope to learn a few things about cooking from that. But what's your favorite separate or cut apart or separated meat? And by the way, I know we have some vegans here. Let me tell you, I love you vegans, and I am so concerned about you. These cows eat the stuff that you eat, and I'm eating the cows to protect you and your food, okay? So I hope that you appreciate this great sacrifice, all right? I mean, what's your favorite cut? Sirloin? T-bone? Ooh, a big juicy T-bone? How about a New York strip? By the way, that's my favorite. You like that? Filet mignon? Or as we say in Alabama, filet mignon. I mean, you gotta know how to pronounce it, but you eat it right. What, is it prime rib? What's your favorite cut? In all honesty, I have yet to find a cut of beef that I don't like. It's all good stuff. So let's take this. I know this is crude, but I'm trying. Let's take this and compare it to God. If we get a taste, just a taste of who he is, there's nothing that we can ever compare that taste to. We have never experienced anything like him. And when we speak of holiness, you kind of catch that glimpse. You say, oh, I saw it. I saw it there for a second. Because that's the idea. We're dealing with our Creator God, who is absolutely unlike anything or anyone that we have ever known. And that's what we bring. I believe that's what makes the difference in this study of God's holiness. But God's holiness, it's far more than separateness. His holiness is also transcendent. Okay, I tried not to do it. I really did. I'm bringing out the big words. Okay, and I know something that sort of frustrates me about listening to other preachers sometimes is I get the sense that preachers are preaching to preachers. Now, I had to go to the classes, I had to attend, I had to learn the theology and all the proper terms for this and the language and so on. And so I have to sit there and listen to it because that's my background and training. But most people, when preachers are doing that, you can see the eyes start blazing. And I think we're preaching to people in a language and they don't know what we're saying. So years ago I said, look, to the best of my ability, I'm not going to do that. I want to put it down where if I can get it, I think anybody can get it. So that's what I try and do. And yet, when we're talking about God, how can we avoid the words? I mean, we have to use the most substantial, meaningful, powerful words to even begin to get the concept of God across to us. So yes, he's transcendent. Okay, let's try and define it. What does it mean to be transcendent? It means literally to climb across. Whatever we're talking about, again, the concept is that God climbs across it and is so far beyond it that he transcends it. Again, no comparison between who God is and this idea. He is a cut above. He is literally climbing across. He's beyond. That's who the God is that we are serving. Another translation is, he is exceeding usual limits. I mean, oh my, I just, wow, this is, This is so powerful to me. Whatever the best is, God has climbed across it and has exceeded the limits. Whatever the bigness of God is bigger. Whatever the greatest thing we can think of God, think about God, He's greater than that. That's this idea of Him being holy, other, separate, transcendent. Paul, I think, expresses it, or at least he's seeking to express it. I like the King James. I memorize it this way. But I like the way he's struggling, and I'm saying he's struggling. I know he's inspired by the Holy Spirit here. But look at how he tries to get this concept to us. Now, unto him that is able to do exceeding. But it's not just exceeding, it's also abundantly. But it's not just exceeding abundantly, it's above. Do you see what he's doing? It's exceedingly, abundantly above all we can ask or think. No matter how great our thoughts are, God is exceedingly, abundantly above anything that we can bring to the table. That's who he is. In the New American Standard, it's this way. Now to him who is able to do far more abundantly beyond all that we ask or think. I sometimes think I can ask or think some pretty big things. How about you? You ever think of that? I think, boy, big request. You know, God is just too, nothing is too big for God. Again, in the New Living Translation, he is able to accomplish infinitely more than we might ask or think. And maybe that gives us this idea of his transcendence and how great that God is. However big you think he is, he's bigger. However great, he's infinitely greater. However pure, he's infinitely purer, infinitely holy. This is the idea that we're trying to get. In relationship to the world, he's higher than the world. He has absolute power over the world. And the world has no power over him. I shared with you, I often think of the people through the years that I've studied with who I think Paul described very accurately in Romans 1 as haters of God. They don't believe in God. They're skeptical of God. And in their anger over things that have happened, the evil in the world, those are questions I think we all ask and we can deal with them and have. But they say things like, well, I just don't believe in God. And if there is a God, when I stand in front of him, and I remember several statements that people made with that attitude. One of them said, I'm going to take my finger and stick it up God's nose. Really? Uh-huh. And another says, I shared this, I think, last week. One fellow said, I'm going to treat God like the mangy cur dog he is. Oh, people, we think in our awesome humanity that we actually are going to have the power to call God into account. Do you see the thinking? Total fantasy. The moment one of these people sees God, they will begin to cry out, as the Bible describes, for the mountains to fall on them, just to hide them from God's sight. They'll call out and ask the earth to open up and swallow them so that they can no longer be seen by God. The last thing, matter of fact, I'll say this, it will never cross their mind when they see God to think they're going to put their finger up his nose or they're going to treat him like a cur, mangy dog. The only thing that will happen is they will know the terror of the holiness and the separateness of Almighty God. They'll get a glimpse and finally understand the God who is. We don't have power over him. He has power over us. But we think some way we're going to call him to account. Folks, it doesn't work that way. You remember that was Job's wish in Job 13? He says, but I would speak to the Almighty and I desire to argue with God. He kept saying, I want God to come down here. I want him to appear. And I want to ask him all my questions. He wants to hold God accountable. And do you remember then what happened? God showed up. And where was all this confidence that Job had that he was going to be able to accost God and hold him accountable? It wasn't there anymore. Where was the idea that he would stand in judgment of God? it wasn't there anymore. Again, let me paraphrase. He said, Lord, I had no idea what I was asking for. Please go back to where you came from. Get me out of here. Do you see, did you, maybe just a second you get the flash? That's who he is. And that's why I'm saying if we get this vision, if we can just see that, we will willingly bow the knee. We will humble ourselves because we are dealing with one who is separate, transcendent, a cut above, beyond anything that we can ask or think. We don't have a clue, even at our best. And that, I believe, is really important for us to understand. Transcendence describes his consuming majesty. Again, big words, big concept, but think about it. There's no one, nothing that is like him. He's an infinite cut above everything else. When the Bible calls God holy, it means God is transcendently separate. Transcendentally separate, sorry. Okay, I told you I was going to fail. Have I flopped on my face hard enough? How do you get this across? But if you do, wow. Wow. And that is the idea. Another thing that I found was people struggle with this too. They want to find another way to address God, and several said, this is the way that we do it. He's entirely other. We have never experienced anything like him, whatever it is. He is other. He's just so foreign in that sense. Well, I'm going to try and use that one, but I hope you'll understand. He's different and unique in every special way possible. And I think that we've heard this. Another problem with understanding holiness is that it's used of so many things. These are just a few of the things that are described as holy. We have holy ground. You remember when Moses came to the burning bush that didn't burn? And God told him to remove his sandals because the ground he was standing on was? Now before God appeared, it was just ground. There was nothing special about it. But then God, see, when God appears, he makes things holy. He makes it separate. He makes it trans. He makes it other. And it's to be treated that way. And look at the list. Holy Sabbath, a day above other days with a particular purpose. Holy place, holy linen coat. I know one brother who strongly believes that that's the reason when you come to church, you ought to wear your best. Because those who worship God wore their best. These holy linen coats. I appreciate the idea. James gives us another view. It doesn't matter, but nonetheless. Look at all of them. And it's not an exhaustive list. So that sort of, you know, God decides. He's the one who makes things holy. So again, trying to get this across. That, brothers and sisters, to me is holy ground. That's a picture taken not long after Flight 93 slammed into the earth. Will we ever forget 9/11? And what happened? Well, they're on a flight. They recognize now they've gotten enough communication to understand that terrorists have hijacked planes and they're using those planes as weapons. And they realize that they were one of the weapons. They were going to take that flight back to Washington, D.C., and they were going to slam it into the White House or into the Capitol building. We've learned that afterward. That was the plan. And the people on board said, no, no. And they rose up, and we hear Todd Beamer on the phone to his wife just before he gives his life to save those people in D.C. He says, let's roll. They went up. They tried to get into the cockpit. The terrorists flew the plane into the ground, killing everyone aboard. That's holy ground, folks. You see, before, it was just ground. Just typical, not different. But now, are you with me? They'll never build a mall on this site. They'll never put up a bar on this site. They'll never treat this piece of ground as common like any other piece of ground. That's the idea of holy. It's set apart. You never treat it as you do other things. It's not common anymore. It's made different, separate, holy, transcendent. Again, this is the idea. When you're studying the Old Testament, you realize that God alone is holy, and He's the only one who can make ground holy. Now, we have tried to do that by making a memorial. And I tear up. It's just like when I go to Arlington Cemetery. I tear up when I go to the Vietnam War Memorial. I tear up. The sacrifice, the death, the destruction, and undeserved by so many. But they did it because they cared for us, for this nation, to protect us. That's holy. That's the idea. And as sacred, and I hope I'm not misusing the word, as those places are to me, God transcends. He climbs over. There's nothing like Him. And I hope that helps. Another thing I'd like to point out is in the Old Testament, when things are made holy, here's what happens. It's been separated from common use. Second, it's not to be touched unless it's by one that God has approved to touch. That's why, I don't understand when the ark was falling off the ox car, what's wrong with a fellow trying to save it? Folks, it's holy. And there were only certain ones who could touch it. And God does not compromise His holiness. And that scares the pudding out of me. He does not compromise. We think, whoa, why is God doing that? Folks, He's holy. And the concept of holiness, He transgressed, as well-meaning as He was. Did you catch it, James? Did you get it? You don't treat God as common. You don't use His name in vain. Because He's holy. It may not be eaten, the bread in the temple. It was for a specific purpose. It may not be used for common matters. It is special. It is special. And that, brothers and sisters, is my poor attempt to describe holiness. It's set apart. It's involving purity. It is involving goodness. Purity is not excluded from the idea of holy. It's contained within the idea of holy. Yes, God is pure, but that doesn't quite get the job done. Okay, can I shut up now? We'll pick up here next week. I have a whole bunch, so I'm going to need some help to get out. So let me blank the screen. And if somebody would like to go back there and put us on the invitation. Thank you, Heath. I don't want to bore you, but I certainly want to get across the concept of what it means in defining God's holiness, because it's what moves us to treat Him, at least to attempt to treat Him in the manner in which He should be treated, as He deserves. You can see there's more to come. He's holy. And you know the greatest news in the world? God can take all of us profane, sinful, fallen, all of us marred, lost, and He has given His Son so that He, through His blood, could make us holy as well. He determines what's holy. He can make things holy. Did you know that you're looking at a holy man? Because God has made me so. Not because I am. When God touches something, He makes it holy. He sets it apart. I'm God's. I don't know why He wants me, but He says He does. I'm glad He does. He can do that with you. He wants to do that with the entire world. And He has given such a sacrifice. This holy God has given Himself in the form of His Son. There goes that Trinity again. The Godhead. He has sacrificed Himself so that we might have a relationship with Him, so that we can approach Him. And I continue to marvel at Paul's statement in Ephesians 3:12, where he tells us to come before God with confidence, not to run away, but to run toward, because He so loves us and we're convinced. We got my family here, Josh, part of it. Josh and his crew are here. Picked them up at the airport, and it was great because right behind them, Steve O'Brien was coming back. Good, Steve's here. But it's so thrilling when you haven't seen the grandkids and you get those hugs and you see those big smiles, and you know, somehow we can identify with and we can align with and have a relationship with God in the best way. I think of my children. I think of my grandchildren. I think of those that I love the most. And I think that's how God feels about each and every one of us. And I want to say, no way. You can't think of me that way. Not after what I've done. But folks, that's Him. Because He has dealt with this issue. He has done something by which He can make us holy so that we can enter His presence with confidence, knowing that we're going to be welcome. We can run to Him, not from Him. Can you do that? He calls us to accept His grace. He knows everything that we've done, every sin we've committed, every word that we've uttered that we wish we could take back. Every time we've hurt someone or done something that we wonder, how could I have done that? He understands and sees it all. And He sent His Son, and He took all of our sin and placed it on Him. And He poured out His wrath and His judgment and His anger on Him so that we, by believing in Him, could receive the benefit of His purity, of His holiness. Isn't that incredible? How could you miss that? How could you not want that? And wouldn't it be worth giving up whatever is essential or necessary to you in order to know this blessing from God? Well, that's why we preach, and that's why we offer the invitation. And Lord willing, we'll pick up there. Still going to define it a little bit more. Then I'm going to talk about the terror of holiness, and it ain't going to be fun. It's kind of rough, but I hope that you can deal with it, because you understand that God has made us pure, but there's also terror involved. So we're going to stand and sing the invitation song. If we can help you in any way to make your relationship or to get your relationship with the Lord right and to make it what it ought to be, please come while we stand and while we sing.